This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What a weekend. Why can't they all be 3 days long?
Good sports. Good sports.
Yeah, there was a ton going on. I said to you today, I said, I don't know if we're going to have time to do a bunch of lengthy call topics because there was 1,000 things over the last 3 days you and I both want to just give thoughts on. And by the time we do that, it's going to be 2 o'clock and we're going to be heading on out of here. But it was a great weekend both in the sports world and resting up, recuperating a little bit. How things go for you?
Nice. Just me and the little guy at home and getting him on a sleep schedule and everything like that. Your boy is a hero. I need to be hailed as a conquering king when my wife returns. And it won't happen, but it'll somehow be something that she did and not something that I did.
She set the stages for this, I think, a couple days before she left.
Yes, yeah, clearly her efforts. It was me. I did it. I need the praise. Praise me.
So a lot of things we can kind of mow through here rapid fire as for the biggest sports stories of the weekend. Look, I think the Astros fallout continues to dominate, and it just keeps getting worse and worse. We'll play audio as the day goes along from various parties, including...
Is this continually being botched by the higher-ups, whether it's Jim Crane, whether it's Rob Manfred?
Well, it's unbelievable. I think most notably because there's nothing they can say that satisfies people, number one.
Right.
They could have a perfect press conference where they don't say anything ridiculous or stupid, and people are still going to be irate and take issue with the things that they're saying.
Because the punishment isn't there.
Exactly, because they messed up when they didn't punish the players, and people are furious about it. When I say people, I don't just mean fans anymore. I mean other players, managers, other front office executives. But on top of that, they are saying silly things. They are doing things that are ridiculous. Rob Manfred, in his interview that was 45 minutes long with ESPN, which, by the way, I think his first comment should have come at a press conference behind a microphone with all comers being able to ask questions and follow-ups and poke and prod. But instead, he handpicked a television network. No disrespect to ESPN or Carl Ravitch, who I thought did a good job, but that they have a relationship with. Who knows how much vetting before that interview there was of some of the things that might be asked. I'd assume none, but you don't know because it wasn't a press conference. But he sat there, and he said something that has drawn the ire of players all over the sport, including Justin Turner of the Dodgers, when he talked about not taking the World Series away, the 2017 championship, and he referenced it as if it's just a trophy.
A piece of metal.
No, I'm not going to take a piece of metal away. As if that's all that happens when you win a championship. And it really bothered players. I mean, to this minute, there are guys still reacting around Major League Baseball, social media, and otherwise, who have now more of a disdain for their commissioner than they have had at any point.
He had a quote also at a press conference, Grapefruit League Media Newsday, that he said, if you look at the faces of the Houston players as they've been out there publicly addressing this issue, they've been hurt by this. They will live with questions about what went on in 2017 and 2018 for the rest of their lives.
Well, the best part about that quote was it started by him taking issue with the idea that they weren't punished. He said, you know, my biggest frustration about this whole thing is the misconception that the Astros players haven't been punished, which, by the way, they weren't.
He's going with the they have to think about what they did defense or school of thought. I guess I'll start doing that as a parent. Nobody's going to anybody's room. Nobody has to leave. Nobody gets punished at all. Think about what you've done as you get to go on and do the next thing, or you get to go on and do exactly what you want to do. This is ludicrous. Now, I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to avoid the real issue. He can't punish these guys, A, because of the players' union and maybe other teams are doing it, and who knows exactly what the deal is. But he's floundering. He looks so bad as this has gone on. I like Rob Manfred. I mean, he talked to us surrounding the All-Star game. I've been impressed with his willingness and desire to push the envelope in terms of making the game more appealing to a younger generation. He's trying to implement changes. Players are always going to bristle at that stuff. So they're coming at it from two angles. I want the forward-thinking commissioner, which he is, which Silver is.
I like
But
it.
He looks terrible right
he
now.
He was unpopular in some circles because of it. But That is so now into the back seat.
Yep.
And those ideas of pushing the game forward don't matter. We could talk a little bit later in the show. He is the least popular person maybe in all of sports
right now
today. If you're looking at approval ratings, it has not been, forget good day, good week, good month. It hasn't been a good quarter for Rob Manfred at this point. So much more coming on the Astros. Mike Trout, who has never had an opinion about anything, mad enough to speak up on this. Anthony Rendon, now of the Angels, which sounds weird to say.
Not used to that.
Has come out. So we'll talk about all the comments from all over baseball. And Carlos Correa's lengthy interview with Ken Rosenthal, which was incredible. And his back and forth with Cody Bellinger, who he told to shut the bleep up. And Kurt Suzuki, who got sucked into the middle of this thing. Also this weekend, you had the NBA All-Star festivities. Three-point contest was awesome. I like the addition of the two long shots. Dunk contest was actually really good, although it was completely blown by the judges. Because, again, Aaron Gordon, who's got probably two of the five or six best dunk contests ever on his ledger.
Yep.
And maybe three of the top seven or eight dunks in dunk contest history, has still never won this
thing. Not a champion.
Got robbed again.
Yeah, Levine winning the time that they dueled back and forth. That's fine. I can live
reasonable
with that.
Reasonable enough.
This time, this one's tough to swallow. He basically said, I'm not doing this anymore.
He shouldn't.
And he shouldn't. I wouldn't either.
Why would he do it? I come put on a show for you. I do the best dunking, and you don't give me a title.
It's the scoring is problematic at this point because
the whole thing is just.
Well, of course, and it's also a dunk contest.
We act like it's a big deal, and like, how could they get this wrong? There's a dude doing crazy dunks, and Spike Lee is running in the paint. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, how formal is this?
It's one of those things where, like, you know, Cubs fans are like, Kyle Schwarber was robbed. The ball hadn't landed on the fencing yet when Bryce Harper was hitting it before the next pitch was thrown. It's also really fun. 40,000 people in the ballpark had a great time. What do we really care about? You know what I mean? I know it's a dunk contest, and I don't know what it matters in the grand scheme of things, but 50 is inadequate because, like, there were dunks that were 50s, and then other dunks that were 50s are unquestionably better.
Yeah.
The catching the ball 360 windmill off the side of the backboard was a better dunk than one of Pat Connaughton's dunks. It just was.
It is not that often. I'll be honest. I know how crazy these dunks are, and as a guy who can't jump off the ground barely,
right?
It is incredible when you just stop and you think, oh, that doesn't look that cool, but let's just think about a human being doing that. The off the side of the backboard windmill dunk thing that he did, that was the first time in a long time that my jaw actually kind of fell agape, where I was like, wow.
What
planet is this?
Because
normally I think we're overreacting, and everyone's screaming, and Kenny the Jet saying, it's back, baby, and it's all stupid. But that dunk was actually ridiculous.
It was absurd.
The All-Star game was super competitive. They had a race for some inexplicably odd reason with the new rules to 157 points. The final score is 157-155. Kawhi Leonard won the MVP award, and what's interesting about that is that for the first time ever, the MVP award is now named in Kobe Bryant's honor of the All-Star game. And Kawhi, obviously, in winning the award, was thrilled about that.
And you have in your hands something nobody else has, and that's an MVP All-Star Game trophy with the name Kobe Bryant on it. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot to me. You know, words can't even explain. Just making this the first Kobe Bryant MVP trophy. You know, I want to thank Kobe for everything he done for me, all the long talks and workouts. Thank you. This one for him.
Kawhi and company did a great job honoring Kobe Bryant this weekend. Really started, and you can hear the audio later in the show if you hang with us. Magic Johnson gave a great speech. They had an 8-second moment of silence for Kobe Bryant while everyone held hands in the arena, and his daughter as well as Gianna. They actually, to kick off the whole weekend, put 24.2 seconds on the clock, and everyone in the arena kind of went nuts and stood up and cheered. I thought throughout the All-Star festivities in Chicago at United Center, where he's had so many great moments, as much as they could, they made this celebration about Kobe's life, which I thought was touching and necessary.
Good showcase for Chicago. Fun weekend, fun event. I didn't catch much of the Rising Stars game, to be honest with you, but
you missed Rui and your boy Mo Wagner both having a nice game.
Both playing. I mean, the Saturday night event I thought was great. The Skills Challenge, I didn't really care. That wasn't that much fun.
But that guy Cam Adebayo.
Yeah.
What?
Dude.
What a weird body and whole situation for him to be that athletic.
He is a player.
That was crazy.
They didn't have any problem moving on from Whiteside, and they think that's a building block. I mean, that guy's going to be a stud. He already is really, really good. But Saturday night, I'm with you. Our boy Davis Bertans getting into the final three. The Buddy Hield drilling the shot at the buzzer to win the three-point contest was good. Set the stage for the dunk contest. The Dwight Howard, I think the commentators took a little bit away from the event, to be honest with you, because they're like talking about stuff. Dwight Howard did some cool things. Like he did this tribute to Kobe Bryant that nobody noticed in real time. And they trotted Jameer Nelson out again. Like they didn't even notice that Jameer Nelson was there until it had kind of ended. And they sort of missed the mark on some of this stuff. But that was really fun.
That's
as well.
What happens when you just have four people doing stand-up skits.
Right. They're all shooting,
you know, all
or
trying
shooting the
bull to be
the other.
Funniest one in the room. They did do a by the way, a roast of the TNT guys.
Yeah.
Which actually was funny and was good, and it was off to the side. I just don't like the roast being live while I'm trying to watch the dunk contest.
Oh, yeah.
But they actually brought in Jeff Ross and a bunch of guys and had an actual roast, which was kind of funny. Also this weekend, bad news, Caps fans. The spiraling is continuing here.
It's a thing, man.
Last 20 games, they're 10-10, basically, and they have the fewest points, 20 points, in the whole division in that time. The Devils, over the last 20 games, basically a quarter of a season, have more points than the Capitals. They lost 3-1 to the Coyotes on Saturday, and then yesterday on the holiday on Monday, they lose 3-2 to the Golden Knights.
Under 6 minutes to go here. Back in behind the net. A shot for Pacioretty. He scores. Caps lose the draw. Pacioretty picks it up and puts it home. The former Montreal captain gets his 27th of the year. It's 3-0 Las Vegas.
Bad news Bears, man. Down 3 goals at that point. Holtby saved them or else they'd have been blown out in the first period. Bad defensive breakdowns. Everyone's talking about the defense being an issue, and it has been. But they've scored 4 goals in one of their last 6 games. So this goes both ways here. They're waiting on Ovechkin to get 700. That's hurting them a little bit because of all the attention being paid to him.
Yeah.
He's got his longest goal drought of the season now, 4 games, where he has been pointless during this stretch.
Nothing's going well.
No. They got to get that in the rearview mirror, and they got to get a feel-good win against Montreal coming up at home as they have a chance to get back on the good foot on Thursday night at Capital One Arena. We're Grant and Danny. We're just getting started. That's the lay of the land that was this weekend. Couple stories we didn't get to on the gridiron next, so we could do that. The D.C. Defenders shut out the New York Guardians 27-0, and there was a great turnout. We could talk about that. Plus, Mike Tomlin, who doesn't really talk publicly in the offseason other than when he has to, came out to defend Mason Rudolph. We'll explain why. G&D on 106.7.
Hey, guys. Danny Ruye here from my pals at Ted Britt Ford. I'm a Ted Britt guy. Here's what that means. It means when I get new cars, trucks, or SUVs, I go to Ted Britt Ford. Why? Because of the wonderful treatment I've received. I've liked everything I've gotten from Ted Britt Ford. Couple years ago, it's 2016, I think, actually was the year. We got ourselves a Ford Edge. Test drove an Explorer, test drove the Escape. Really liked that Edge. It was right for us. And then all of a sudden, we had an unbelievable deal. We couldn't believe it. We like didn't want to say anything. My wife and I were there, and they showed us what the number was, and I was like, really? I mean, yeah, totally. That's it. It was unbelievable, right? Great value for your trading, 120% every day of Kelley Blue Book value. You just show up, and that's what you get. You get confidence for life when you buy from Ted Britt Ford. Powertrain, service loaners, battery replacement. Whole nine yards, right? Complimentary Virginia State inspection, all for life. Anyway, the experience was so good that as we're driving home, I'm going, you know what I'm going to do? Next time I need a car, I'm going to Ted Britt Ford. I did. I got my Fusion. It's downstairs right now charging up. I love the experience, and you will too. And it's not because I'm some great big, just a dude, just a guy, just a regular old dude, just like so many thousands of folks that have come through their doors that they've made happy over the years. 60 plus, if you're keeping track. Go see my guys at Ted Britt Ford, Fairfax, Tilly. Click away at tedbritt.com. When you go, tell them.
McLoyne out of the gun on 2nd and 6, has the snap, throws. He is picked off at the 40-yard line. 35 and 30, foot race. And nobody's going to catch Jameer Thurman for the second time in as many weeks. A pick six for the Defenders.
Oh,
they lead 18-0. How about a 27-0 win for the D.C. Defenders at home on a frigid day? Still had an announced attendance of about 15,000. And double-digit thousands of people filing into Audi Field. They were loud. They were energetic. We were wondering, not you and I specifically, but I think the city, the XFL fan base, what is this going to look like in week 2? I think I'm being colored a little bit, maybe overly positive about the league because of how good the product's been here. Cardale Jones might be the MVP of the league through 2 weeks. The Defenders are one of the couple of unbeatens still in the XFL. They're legit. They look like a real contender with 8 weeks to go in this season. And the fan base in a stadium that is perfect for the XFL has responded in a way that nobody was anticipating. So it's all great here in the nation's capital.
Yeah,
I don't know that it's that way in every other market.
Yeah, what are they saying in 0-2 cities? Or, you know, if there's a disaster. I mean, Seattle looks like it's got all sorts of buzz. I mean, 30,000 people showed up and guys are going nuts. So I tweeted this. I'm at Funny Danny, Grant's at Grant H. Paulson. You say what you want about Mike Florio and Pro Football Talk, but it seemed gleeful.
Real quick, because you said say what you want about Mike Florio, so now let me say something about Mike Florio.
Sure.
I don't know what happened with Mike Florio. And I still, if you're asking me, do I like Mike Florio or I don't, I love Mike Florio.
Uh-huh.
He made himself out of nothing, like out of his own basement. He started this Pro Football Talk blog. Really good dude. Does a good job, I think, putting local reporters over when they break stories and giving them credit on his site, which means a lot to me as a former beat guy.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, he has kind of jumped the shark a little bit now. And a lot of it happens with a lot of us. I think we get into these trouble areas where he is, I don't know how to describe this other than kind of Stephen A. Smithy a little bit. Like, there are so many hot takes and shtick, and there are just players he decides he doesn't like that he's jerks about, and players he decides he does like that everything they do, even when they play poorly, he's got a comment on. It's very weird. He's almost like becoming a character of himself.
Right. I mean, there are times, and again, I'm with you, everything you said, lockstep. But there are times it's almost like he's one of those dogs that grabs a hold of the mailman's butt and won't let go.
Right.
And it's that. You know what I mean?
Now, I still like him. He is completely self-built.
Yeah.
And his product is excellent, and he's on NBC Football Night in America, and he's all over the place. And I think his analysis and his commentary and his understanding of law and his background, it's all very helpful.
Very helpful.
And
it's good.
He's proficient at what he does. But the shtick that he's kind of developing into now, mm-hmm. I could do without.
And so he tweeted, and you know, he hid behind, all I'm doing is sharing information. But there was it felt like there was something to it, given his past comments. But he said, DC defenders see 12.4 attendance drop from week one to week two, or from week to week. And people were grilling him for it, et cetera. And for me, I don't view it that way. I go, freezing cold day, D.C. schools were out, a lot of breaks are happening.
I also don't think that's correct. He said it was, what was the attendance drop?
12.4% attendance drop.
That's certainly not based on what they announced, for the record.
Well, I thought it was from the post. It was 17 and change for the first game and then 15 and change for game two.
Oh, 1,200?
12.4%.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So I thought you were saying 12,000 fewer
no.
people.
So it's very convenient where you go from 17 to 15 and
right.
forget the change.
To me, it's essentially a wash.
And
it's
I
within
go,
a couple thousand people.
I go, that's really good. That's 88% of the people came back or tried it again or came in
yeah, on
less
a day
than,
that was
less,
40 degrees.
Yeah, less than ideal conditions. I'm going, that's a win. But he's sort of viewed it as a loss.
Right.
And there are those, and I think a lot of folks that are into this thing, bristle at rooting for it to lose and fail.
Yeah, I think that's my frustration, and it's why when you and I go back and forth, sometimes I get annoyed a little bit,
mm-hmm.
is that there are plenty of people like me who want it to succeed. There are plenty of people like you who don't want it to succeed. And so cancel all that out. I guess my point is I'm not going to sit here when there's a terrible game between two. Like, there were bad games this weekend.
Uh-huh.
Quarterback play was awful. Matt McGloin, who just threw that pick six that you heard coming in, was horrendous. I mean, Logan and I, on the broadcast, not even just during the breaks, we're uh-huh. talking about how bad he had played. And this is not going to work for this league if this is the quarterback level that is expected. This is a guy that started a playoff game in the NFL. That having been said, I'm not going to sit there and sugarcoat that. And I don't expect, and I would ask that a Mike Florio or you or people that are actively avoiding this thing wouldn't come out and just every time they can pounce on it and say,
right.
just saw a terrible interception in the St. Louis game. Man, this league will never work. Like, what are you doing?
Right, and you'll notice I don't do that.
Because guess what? The NFL has those plays, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you ever watched a Bengals-Bills game, like, 2 years ago? Like, Thursday night football games between the AFC South 1 and AFC South 2? There's bad football in that league, too.
How about the Redskins after Alex Smith broke his leg? I mean, you've
right.
seen this before,
yeah,
right?
The XFL starting quarterbacks were playing for them.
Yeah,
Josh Johnson.
Mark Sanchez, goodness gracious. So, but you'll notice I don't do that. I'm not tap dancing on any failure or anything. I just don't happen to be terribly interested in it. I think there's a big difference between that and actively, you can't wait for a data point that supports what your theory is and pouncing on it and tweeting it with glee.
Let's talk the data point itself, though.
Yeah.
The fact that 15,000 people
I think that's really good.
Came this weekend was huge.
Yes.
Now, here is what I now feel is that the XFL in D.C. can work. I mean, people are invested in this team in a way that I did not anticipate.
I agree with that.
I called Valor games before I called Defender games, right? And I was invested like I am in the XFL professionally, in the AFL. No disrespect to the indoor game, which I loved, and I had a blast calling those games, and Ted Leontis and Zach Leontis trying to get that thing going, I still think was a worthwhile endeavor, and I'm so glad that they did it. And I will stand by that product, and I'll tell you that that indoor game, for any kids that went, that is a blast, and I wish it still existed. But the reaction in town, the media coverage, mm-hmm. the television deal that was struck, the amount of people going to these games, there's no comparison.
Right, I agree.
I mean, it is not comparable. And I would even say the same to the Alliance, not that we had a team here in D.C., but if you watch the AAF, this is bigger and better than that. Now, mm-hmm. the question still is, can it exist? I don't know the answer. I don't know in these 0-2 cities where, like, the Tampa Bay Vipers are horrendous and scored 3 points in the first week. I don't know what they're saying in that market.
Right.
I also think part of this is this fun in D.C. element of doing this to spite the Redskins.
Yeah, like, this is not Dan Snyder. Yeah.
There's signs about Dan Snyder and the Redskins at Audi Field, and we've got a winning team in D.C., and it's all a big fun joke to people. I don't care what gets you there. If you right. have fun and you enjoy it, that's cool. Now, they won't be home again for about a calendar month until coming up for their three-game run, I think, like next month at some point.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you, these games have been a blast. Obviously, calling them, this is what I want to do. This is like a dream job for me. I love it. But being at the games, people are really, really enjoying this product.
I'm in lockstep with everything you're saying here. It can work here. And it's working here. It's happening here. Now, on the macro level, again, is someone in, I don't know, Allentown, Pennsylvania, are
Correct.
They in? Do they care?
Here's my question. If it can work here, does that mean it can work if you find the right hears? Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
If it can
and
work in Washington, D.C.,
that's my question.
Which I wouldn't have thought necessarily would have been the perfect home for an XFL team.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to get, let's say it falls off to $12,000 at a time. Okay.
Right.
12,000 people there with decent TV ratings. If it can work here, are there 8 to 10 other markets in the country that you just have to find the right puzzle pieces, because then the league can work?
Because to me, it's about the AAF fails, not because people in certain cities where the teams are don't care. It's that, for me, there's no incentive for me to turn on a Memphis team, and because they're playing, I don't even remember what the teams are, they're playing Columbus.
You don't care about the team.
Yeah,
you don't
game,
care about the players.
Exactly.
Why are you watching?
Yeah, that game doesn't mean anything to me. There's no history behind it. Whereas, I'm telling you, if Seattle plays San Francisco, I got to tune in because I know what it means. There's like that history to it. You don't have that in an upstart league. The key is, how do you get people not in these markets where the teams are? Because Seattle, they're in on this thing, dude. Seattle, D.C., places where I guess they're good or they've got great fan attendance and energy. What about, as we said, the 0-2 cities? What about places where there aren't the teams that aren't coming to the games? That's the key.
Here's what we should circle back to later and take some calls on. This opinion, I think Florio perpetuated this weekend. And this is a correct opinion, I believe. And some other guys, I saw Tyler Palumbis, one of our buddies, used to play for the Redskins, talking about this online as well.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, quarterback play will do or
yes.
die. You know, this will make or break this league. This is all going to be about quarterback play. And this weekend, the teams that had good quarterbacks, it was a fun, exciting product. The teams that didn't, it just was tougher to watch. Is it that simple? You know, whether or not this league can attract the right quarterbacks. They tried to get Tim Tebow. We told him no. He's trying to play baseball still. So we can get into that as we continue. Next, Mike Tomlin supporting Mason Rudolph, who Myles Garrett is still telling people racially insulted him before he hit him on the head with the helmet. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Mike Tomlin coming out to defend his quarterback, Mason Rudolph. Rudolph under fire again. He's the guy that got hit with the helmet, by the way. He's the guy that got hurt by Myles Garrett. But he's also being grilled and questioned, just like he was earlier this year, because after his suspension went until the offseason, Myles Garrett met with the National Football League and they reinstated him. You'd have thought maybe this was all over. He'd say, hey, sorry for what I did, and move on. He doubled down on the fact that the reason he hit Myles Garrett with the helmet was because of anger that stemmed from Myles Garrett using a racial epithet during their exchange,
yeah.
basically. He's saying that he slurred him racially, and that's what moved him to enough anger and emotion to hit Myles Garrett with a helmet. Now, Garrett, for the record, has said that that is not the case. He is refusing and refuting that, just like he did previously. By the way, not one other player on the field apparently heard this, even though there were a bunch of them around. And in the investigation the league did, they said that there was no evidence and no reason to believe that that was the case. But Myles Garrett, his word against Mason Rudolph's, is still saying that Mason Rudolph did this. So what happened? Well, the head coach of the Steelers, who is, I think people know this, an African-American male, came out And Mike Tomlin said, I'm standing by my player here. I know Mason Rudolph. I know his character. He didn't do this. I don't think he did. He was asked, do you think he's going to potentially bring legal ramifications against Myles Garrett if this is in fact a lie? And he said, I don't know, but he should defend his name in any way possible. And he is stepping up and defending his player. I've always loved Mike Tomlin. I think he is a leader of men. I think he's super smart, but he's also just a foxhole guy that you want next to you when you go into either a bar fight or, in this case, a football game. You want him giving you the speech right before you take the field. But this is the thing I love about him. This guy gets his players' backs, and he didn't have to do this.
Right.
In fact, he's got a policy where basically he speaks when he has to speak during the offseason. And he came out of the woodwork, even went on First Take with Stephen A. Smith. He's made a little media tour because he sees that his player, in his mind, is being defamed. And he doesn't think he did this and is being called out for it.
We live in a time where the accusation is almost, 95% of the power of a verdict. In other words, people live with accusations forever. Nobody reads corrections. Nobody reads that was our bad and we were actually wrong about this and let us set the record straight. Whatever it is just goes like wildfire. And you know what I'm talking about. Whether you're clicking on Facebook or doing any of the other million things out in the world, you see something that may or may not be true, but they were first, and now that's what you believe, and the rumor spreads. So this accusation is really, really serious. This is a big deal. People are now out there going, and just bear with me for a second, Mason Rudolph's a racist. The accusation's enough for people to believe it, because now it's understandable. He was driven to that level of anger. That's why he swung at him. Myles Garrett, at first people were defending him because Mason Rudolph's right foot it goes near the special area of Myles Garrett at one point, so therefore he deserved it. Now there is a, well, he said something racist probably type thing. Again, nobody reads the correction. So if he didn't do this, which, again, according to everybody on the field, it sounds like, according to anybody that may have heard it, nothing happened.
There's
in this
no
regard,
evidence that he did.
Other
right?
than Myles Garrett's word.
There's also no evidence, I guess, that he didn't other than, I don't know, a pile of it. The investigation didn't turn anything back up. None of the players heard anything on either team, by the way. I mean, you'd like to think that one of the Browns would defend Myles Garrett's honor if they'd heard him say that. None of them did. And they're not lying in saying that they did. Doesn't mean he didn't do it, by the way. And if he did say something racially awful, that makes that moment even worse. It makes what he did unforgivable and inexcusable. I don't personally think it gives Myles Garrett the right to hit him over the head with a helmet that could have killed him. I mean, that helmet weighs a handful of pounds, basically like hitting him in the head with a brick. Still don't believe that he didn't get hurt more. But it at least justifies in some way why Myles Garrett was moved to this anger that he couldn't control. Tomlin, in talking about the investigation, he has been in contact over and over again with the NFL, and he's been told that they found nothing to believe that Rudolph did what Garrett's saying.
It was presented as a he said situation. Even to this day, it was presented as a he said. And I think the National Football League office was very clear that they launched a thorough investigation among all parties involved, including the interviewing of people and the analysis of technology that was on that field. And they found no evidence of Miles's allegations. And I think that should be stated.
Important. Right? I mean, he's right. That should be stated. Whether you agree with it or not, whether you think he may have said something or not, that has to be part of this. That there was an investigation that found nothing about that claim. And again, I think that Mike Tomlin's the one saying all this, and this is why he's doing this, by the way. It would be a little bit different, in my opinion, Danny, if this was a white coach. Mike Tomlin coming out and saying, listen up here. This is my quarterback. I know his character. I think that's part of why this became such a big story over the weekend. Now, how about this, too? Mm-hmm. The thing I can't get past is that, according to Tomlin all along, nobody on the Browns has told him, after the fact until right now, nobody at any point, that Mason Rudolph said a word that he shouldn't have said or said something to Myles Garrett that he shouldn't have from a racial standpoint. And my thought was, if that actually happened, Garrett might have said that night. He might have said it right after the fact. One of the players would have said after the fact, yeah, this is why he was so upset. And that never happened. Now, John Dorsey, for what it's worth, the fired general manager of the Browns,
right,
came out this weekend, and he took Myles Garrett's back, and he said he told me soon after that that's why he did what he did, that he had said fill in the blank to him. But this is, again, this is from the First Take interview on ESPN from Mike Tomlin.
Myself personally, I was on the field immediately after that altercation and subsequently after the game. I got a lot of personal relationships within that organization over there in Cleveland. At no point did anyone within that organization come forward and say, Mike, heads up, we got a situation here or something of that nature that you would expect that comes with those type of allegations. So I fully support Mason Rudolph. We as an organization fully support Mason Rudolph.
I think that's a big deal.
It is. It is a big deal. And again, I guess ultimately we'll never know. The only way I guess we would know is if Mason Rudolph admits it or Myles Garrett recants.
Yeah.
Right? That, hey, this didn't happen. But
maybe we give some lie detector tests.
But yeah, seriously. But as of now, this is just sort of where we're at. It's a reminder of how ugly this incident was. Right? As it stands, it's bad. It's, let me rephrase, it's awful. It's one of the worst things that's happened in the NFL. If this is true, it's even worse. And if it isn't true, it's also a nice bit of seasoning on top of something that's bad because you had a false accusation. Again, there's no upside here for the league. And I think a lot of that, this was going to happen when you pulled the Band-Aid off and reinstated Myles Garrett, right? That's why I would have added a couple games to it to go into this season. But you knew this was going to be re-legislated and come up again, and people are going to have to answer questions about it and discuss it. That was going to happen whenever the suspension ended. We're going to remember what happened in November. We're going to go through this again. But, man, it's just a reminder of how ugly this whole thing was. So bad.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Ron Rivera made $30,000 selling Panthers gear over the weekend. What would you want to buy from a recently fired coach from their closet, if you will? Like, Jay Gruden starts selling all his skin stuff. What would you actually want to purchase from Jay Gruden? We'll get into that next on G&D here on the Fan. He's Danny, I'm Grant, this is The Fan. Did you see the story about Riverboat Ron Rivera having a yard sale this weekend?
I didn't, but I clicked on it after you sent it around as part of an idea for the rundown, and I said, oh, that's fun. I had a good time.
So he got all of his Panthers gear, to his credit. He raised $30,000 by selling it, and he gave it all to charity. This was about 24 hours after Rivera unloaded Josh Norman from his roster and made his first kind of big decision, big move as the head coach of the Redskins. So his next play was to unload 1,000 items he accumulated over 9 seasons with the Panthers for charity. He and his wife Stephanie held a yard sale Saturday at the Humane Society of Charlotte. So I guess they publicized it. Hey, Ron Rivera's going to be there.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he was there, like, if you wanted to come see him, too. I'm not positive about that, but that's what it sounded like in one of the things I read.
You can negotiate, you know, some old clothes. I'll give you 5 for it. Yeah.
$30,000, $237 that they raised that went to the new campus and research facility for one of their favorite charities during their time in Charlotte. So 3,000 people stood in line for the opportunity to purchase everything from one of the countless T-shirts he had with an inspirational promotional slogan. He was big on that. To military paraphernalia he acquired while working with the USO of North Carolina, to the shoes he would wear on the sidelines. It was mostly like a lot of gear and garb, basically. But it was stuff he collected. Like, some of this looks like Greg Olsen's gear, like 88. I see a couple things. Luke Kuechly, Greg Olsen, Cam Newton contributed items to the Humane Society to help reach a goal of $15 million that they need to build what I guess Donna Strucker, who's the vice president of philanthropy, is saying is a real bad state of disrepair for the facility that they're in. So to me, I hadn't seen anything like this in a while. Apparently, there was a garage sale that Vikings coach Bud Grant years and years ago used to hold. Like every year at the end of the season, like the former head coach would do a legit That's yard fun. Sale with all of his stuff, and Vikings fans would come pick through it. But Rivera, who's got a golden retriever named Tahoe and another one named Sierra, and then a mixed breed adopted dog from the shelter, they contributed to the fundraiser with leashes, collars, dog beds, and even a dog crate. So the whole thing seems pretty cool, man. So it brings me this question, though. Let's say Jay Gruden does something similar with all of his Redskins apparel and gear.
I have a yard sale, man.
Is there anything that you would care enough to, like, purchase? Not that you're going to drive over there, but let's just say...
Right.
Website pops up on your screen. You see a bunch of stuff for sale from Jay Gruden, former head coach of the Redskins. Is there anything you'd want?
So, you know me, I'm not as big a, you know, jersey collector or memorabilia, that kind of thing. The thing that I'd be really curious to find somehow, if he's willing to sell it, any kind of notes. any kind of scribbles or jotting down of like plays or different ideas that he might have had? Because, you know, he was involved in scouting. What did he think of fill-in-the-blank player, right? What did he think of a guy that someone else in the organization liked but he didn't? I want to see his notes. I want to see if he's got like a legal pad or like a spreadsheet or something printed out where he's looking over players. Because remember, we were in his office that time and we saw that big board. We started just pointing to guys. What about this guy? What about this guy? Is this guy good? Do you like him? And he just couldn't help himself but start talking about players. I'd want to see his thoughts written down, and I'd pay money for those. I'd be into that.
Interesting. I wouldn't want really any of the gear that he wore. Although I will say he was a big like hoodie and jacket guy.
Mm-hmm.
I like some of the like those sleek jackets he used to wear on the sideline. Like almost windbreaker type, like if it rained, it would just trickle right down kind of look. He was also a big polo shirt guy. I don't have any interest in that, but if he were selling for some reason, like a Motorola coaching headset, like let's say you give those back to the team, obviously.
Yeah.
But let's say he had one like it was his, where he had like JG on the side or something like that. That's something I would want.
That's a great one.
I would also love a play sheet. One of those little IHOP menus that's laminated. Mm-hmm. That says whatever, you know, you type a couple things out on the bottom to remind yourself, like, hey, be courageous, go for a 4th-and-1, whatever you type out. If you are Matt Nagy of the Bears, you type BU in like huge font. He always does that. I always see that. It's on the opposite side of what he's always looking at.
Uh-huh.
So I think he does it just for TV or something.
He doesn't remind himself, I guess?
It says BU in like 150 font at the bottom of his play sheet, as if he's going to just be someone else that day.
I'm going to be someone else.
No, you know be myself today.
The other thing that I would want is a challenge flag.
Oh, that's a good one.
Did he keep his red challenge flag? I would use that around the house.
I would love that.
I would throw the challenge flag all the time.
Would love a challenge flag.
Wouldn't you love to have a challenge flag right now in your right sock?
It'd be sick. And it's probably just, it's like any red flag you could buy at Dick's.
Yeah.
So I would want it to be embroidered like official NFL challenge flag Jay Gruden used against this team to go 0-2 in challenges.
Yeah, to not get a challenge, right?
But, yeah, there's not much else other than the play sheet. The challenge flag I'll add to my list and the Motorola headset. But $30,000 raised by Ron Rivera. Good for him. He is so beloved in Charlotte, too.
Yeah.
Not just the media. The fans adore that guy. I wonder if it'll be like that here. I mean, we haven't had a coach with the Redskins that left here and people liked him. I'll take Gibbs out of the equation. Because
that's the only way.
People love Joe Gibbs because he won 3 Super Bowls before the second time.
Uh-huh.
It's not because he made the playoffs 2 out of 3 years and then left on his own accord. But if you take him out of the discussion, I would say the last coach that left here that people really liked was Marty Schottenheimer. Because he went 8-3 in his last 11.
That's
and nobody
right.
wanted him to get fired. Since then, Spurrier, everyone thought was a joke.
Correctly.
Gibbs were discounting from the discussion. Zorn after him was butt of jokes, was the laughing stock of the town.
Yeah, Shanahan on the way out was...
Shanahan,
whoa.
Even though, you know, I think there's a lot of people like me who thought he did a much better job than he gets credit for and mm-hmm. had him closer than they have been since. People didn't like him at all.
Yeah.
He was lighting fire to the organization. And then after him, Jay Gruden, who's a equally as controversial and polarizing figure. Was he good? Was he not good? He's super likable, but I don't think people necessarily would go meet up with Jay Gruden at Matchbox to have a beer and buy one of his T-shirts.
Yeah, I mean, nice guy is great. That's all well and good. But, you know, you were still in the same boat in terms of how effective the team is. A couple years, a game over 500 is the pinnacle of it. And even then, it's you kind of knew that you're hitting the ceiling. So it'll depend. I mean, Rivera won't be liked if they don't win. I mean, it's the same deal. Redskins fans are just so desperate. And rightfully so. They're so desperate for any kind of effectiveness. That if he does it, I mean, we talk about this all the time. If you do the job in Cleveland, right, you get a statue. If you go 9-7 for 2 straight years in Cleveland, you get a statue. You do something pretty good here, people will like you.
Double plays coming up at 11:45, but next, can you believe how badly Rob Manfred's first interview about why he didn't give the Astros players any punishment went? He referred to the World Series championship as basically winning a piece of mission. Next on Grant.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.